Thank you, everybody, for tuning in to the Vigilance Press podcast. My name is James Dossie, and I'll be your solo host tonight. I've brought with me a very special guest tonight. We have James Clayton, who is also known as Cheshire from Miffed Kitty Press. Hey, so how are you doing tonight, Cheshire?
I'm doing great. It has been an awesome week, and our project is moving forward, and really happy to be here. We appreciate you having us me on tonight.
All right, fantastic. It's great to have you here. To give our listeners a little background, Miffed Kitty is basically taking a tabletop role-playing game that they've been publishing digitally and taking it to the next step and taking it to a video game. So tell me a little bit about Miffed Kitty. Let's fill people in, because not all of our listeners may have heard about Status Quo before.
Yeah, because we're still a pretty small company and we're growing. We originally started as a pen and paper game press, and we worked with other companies back in the early 2000s and wound up going independent and starting our own franchise, and that franchise was Status Quo Chronicles of a Universe at War. That's when we formed Miffed Kitty Press, and we wound up getting a lot of popularity not only here in the United States, but we actually have a decent following over in Germany. They role play in Germany. Who knew?
Yeah, actually, one of my best friends online is in Germany, and he role plays all the time, and I actually do art commissions for him. So yes,
awesome.
There is a pretty active community over there.
And see, that just blew our minds that we were wound up getting international support, but we were looking to continue to expand the game and what we had already built on, which was the 24 alien races of Status Quo. But earlier this year, new technology became available, and Epic Games made the Unreal development kit open source, or at a greatly reduced price and license, for people who actually wanted to put games out onto the market. And we jumped at that and started collecting musicians, animators, artists, programmers, writers, and people that were passionate about the project. And that's really where the SQ project took off.
Now, you're based in Texas, right?
Denton, Texas. We're just outside of Dallas. And what's great is we've been able to draw talent from some of the local game companies that have been, you know, either not doing so well or other people that just don't have any projects going on right now. So we've had contributors from Funimation, people who work for Gearbox, and other people from DNA, the people who made Jimmy Neutron, who have actually looked into the project and signed on to the project and have been helping as contributors.
Wow, fantastic. So yeah, that's a really big pool of talent over in Texas. I mean, not just the big size of the state, but I know that there's a lot of technology companies and especially entertainment companies popping up over there.
Well, there's a lot of great game companies that have been around for a while. Gearbox is here. Mm-hmm. DNA is here. Id has been based out of Dallas. Ninja Works. I mean, there's all kinds of really great game companies based in the area. So we're still pulling artists and looking for people and doing a pledge drive now so that we can draw even more talent to make this a reality.
Fantastic. So before I get into the pledge drive, which I assume is you're referencing the Kickstarter project.
Yeah.
Before we get into that, let's tell people a little bit about Status Quo. What is the setting of the game and what kind of a rule system are you using?
Well, originally for the tabletop game, it was a hard military science fiction role-playing game. In the original release back in 2003, it was 9 alien races. Well, recently, earlier this year, we released in PDF form for free on our website, miffedkitty.com. We released the full version, otherwise known as the complete edition, with complete rules for 24 alien races that are all playable, cybernetics, psionics, mutant characters, as well as network combat and interface, vehicles, pretty much the whole nine yards. We had done so and did all this built on our own D20 system that we had written originally back in 2001. And we got to build everything into our system from the ground up. And that allowed us to create a role-playing game that a lot of players really love to use for just any number of different campaign ideas.
Now, just to clarify, when you say a D20 system, you're actually not talking about the OGL D20 license. You're just talking about a system that uses a D20.
That is correct. We call it the Status Quo system.
Okay. What makes the Status Quo system unique? I mean, what's how are characters built?
Well, characters are built in the class system, just like pretty much any other role-playing game. But in the tabletop game, what made them interesting and fun is we didn't limit classing. The entire class system was based around cross-classing and stacking skill trees up from generalist, specialist, elite, and legendary class levels. And that way, you're not limited to strictly being a medic. You're not limited to strictly being a pilot. You can cross-class as much as possible and use those to build prerequisites for even higher class levels that draw on those skills. And we built the system from the ground up to be able to do that, to where there was no limitation on cross-classing, and the system actually being built around that. And that lends itself well to regular gameplay, advanced gameplay, as well as integrating psionics and just new racial-specific skills and abilities.
Okay, so instead of having to try and rebuild or alter existing skills or races, you could just add it as a new class that someone could multi-class into.
Correct.
That's cool. That's a good approach.
And it's lent itself really well as we're building the design document for the video game that we're working on. Mm-hmm. It has lent itself really well because each of these classes gives bumps to skills and further alters gameplay. And building that in as a mechanic has really, it lets us feel like we're very set apart from a lot of the other games that are on the market right now.
Fantastic. That's a really cool sounding game. So putting aside the rules for a moment, what's the setting like?
The setting is 24 different alien races vying for control of our little corner of the universe. It starts off with the humans, and the humans met aliens very recently in our history, but there are other races out there that have been fighting amongst each other for hundreds, if not thousands, of years. Each one of them has their own culture, their own opinions on the other races, as well as their own technology, their own vehicles, their own unique psionics. And we really have created this very solid kind of lore that players can sink their teeth into, with humans being pretty much the most recent entry into the fray, and how we're dealing with that and how we're working with other races, all while maintaining what humans call the lie. With the lie being in place, humans on Earth have no idea what's going on out in space, and there's a lot of colonies out there that also have been made to believe that aliens don't exist. So while this whole universe is going on, human beings are struggling to maintain the lie while a very precious few of them know what's really going on.
Ah, interesting. So when you're playing a human that's involved in this war, you know, you've already got some kind of level of like special quality to your character just by the virtue of knowing what's going on.
Exactly. Plus, the way that humans spread into space is part of the plot line was they created what was called the Terran Cloning Initiative. So there's also the aspect of there may be another one of your character running around out there, living on a planet, working at a gas station, not having any idea that there's another version of itself out fighting to protect every human across the universe.
Does that cloning factor into the game mechanics at all, or is that mostly just setting dressing?
It's actually part of set dressing, but it does factor into cloning mechanics because in the game, in the role-playing game, as well as an aspect of respawning in the video game, cloning is a very real part of the game. When you die, you pop out of a cloning tube and go, boy, did that suck, and then off you go back into the fray.
That reminds me a lot of Paranoia, if you remember that game from the 80s.
I love me some Paranoia, and actually that was one of the influences for one of the races that I created, that the data net is always watching. Everybody knows what you're doing every single minute of the day.
Ah, fantastic. Would you call humans in this setting to be mostly still recognizable as human, or do you have a lot of transhuman qualities?
The system actually that we put in the book, mostly humans everywhere are human beings, but because of augmentation and cybernetics, they can do that as well. And we have rules for crossbreeds included. Now, that's not worked into the video game yet. Maybe way down the line, it would be great to work in crossbreeds as different playable classes. But in the role-playing game itself, yes, you can create a human Barak crossbreed or a human Roga crossbreed and discuss all of the changes in mechanics and abilities as well as the offering of skills and classes available.
So whenever people start to sit down and look at aliens, they're usually looking at the special powers and special qualities of those creatures. What are some of your favorite special qualities of your aliens?
I love the Aban-Shi because they have telemechanics. They have the ability to talk to any piece of electronic technology as though it were alive. Uh-huh. So they go around making friends with the TVs and computers and sit in your car and tell you, you know, it needs an oil change. There are other races. One of the races in Status Quo, the Avkazi, they actually talk to their higher power directly. And in a very Highlander kind of way, it instructs them to hunt each other down to the last. And I like that as an in-game setting aspect. The G use biological technology, so all of their guns and all of their ships are alive. I mean, there really is, if you ask me what my favorite is, I had so much fun writing every single one of them that I tried to make them all really palpable to different types of players and different kinds of races and different kinds of ways. I mean, I even have one race. Did you ever see Men in Black? Of course,
yes.
You saw Men in Black.
Yes.
Remember the little guys that pilot around the human suits?
Yes.
There's a race of those in Status Quo as well, because they had to go in there. So working that into a video game is going to be an enormous technical challenge. And right now the first title, The Chronicle of Agent White, is just going to be about one woman standing alone to defend an entire planet against a G-brood invasion. But as the series goes on, we're really excited and we're already talking about how to make these other races come to life for the player. And we think it's going to translate really well from the page to the screen, and we're very excited about it.
Well, the neat thing about the modular nature of modern game sales is that you can really add those kinds of things, you know, in what they call downloadable content and
right.
So forth. So you have that ability to kind of enhance the experience as you go. But, you know, that does take a little bit of pre-planning, so I understand it might not pop up in the first game, but it sounds really cool. The idea,
as a matter of fact, we're already discussing what the downloadable content for the first game will be as we're building the design document.
We have
a continuation plan. And the nice thing about making video games, it's very different from making pen and paper games, is when you're putting together a pen and paper game, you can put it into a book and you can come out later with errata and have fun with it and put out other changes and make changes to rules. When you put out a video game, it's kind of set in stone. So you have to think about everything ahead of time and not make plans to change it later on.
Yeah, with video games, you also have the design quality of trying to create the illusion of choice on the player. I mean, you're basically working within a very strict set of parameters. It may be a large set of parameters. Like, you may have, you know, very powerful game system that can hold a large map, but still you're kind of limited to that pre-designed setting for the most part.
As well as triggers that the players go into and start certain events.
Mm-hmm.
It's funny that you mentioned that, because as we're writing Status Quo, the game, we've actually started creating something I can't discuss too much, but it's called the Open Narrative System. And effectively what it'll be is we want it to be a departure from regular video games, where if you don't go do anything and you sit in your space fighter and just kind of hang out, the game will play without you. If you go and you actually contribute and you fight and you make changes, then instead of going and triggering an event, you're setting off triggers by defending in a certain area or evacuating a certain number of colonists, to where instead of the game not moving forward until the player moves forward, the open narrative system is our way of saying the game is going to move forward with or without you. What are you going to do to stop it?
That in that sounds very innovative, in the same way that like Left 4 Dead's virtual director system would kind of use timing and plan, or not necessarily have specific locations, but it would, you know, send a zombie horde after you right when it expected to scare you the most, you know, that was a really cool innovation. Go ahead. Sorry.
Oh, yeah. No. Those methods of game design are great, and they were a big inspiration from us. You're exactly right. Love me some Left 4 Dead.
That's very cool. So now you're planning, you know, segueing into the video game design here. You guys are using the Unreal 3 engine, right?
Correct.
Okay. How are you bringing in the role-playing game elements? You know, one of the things I noticed is that you're trying to bring the actual character sheet into the game.
Correct. Well, to prove that it can be done, UE3 was used to develop Mass Effect 2, as well as the Gears of War games, as well as Borderlands. Mm-hmm. And those titles have shown us that the capability is there to create skill-based changes, proficiencies, as well as class modifications or alterations to playstyle. Mm-hmm. So just because that play, well, because they've shown us that playability is there, we know that it's possible for us to build that in. And through some of our preliminary testing with Unreal Script, we've seen that we're able to do that. So it's actually not as difficult as you might think, and the technology to do this is very new, and we're very excited to be on the forefront of having this available to the public at large.
So with Agent White, you're planning to give her some skill trees that would kind of represent the same kind of multi-classing system that you would have in the pen and paper game?
Exactly. And introducing the template, not 100% of the template will be available to players in the first game, because we want to, you know, there are some things humans just can't do.
Mm-hmm.
But we want to make those available in later titles, but have the first game really center around human general and specialist classes.
So without running into any spoilers or anything, what kinds of things can we expect her to be able to do? I mean, is there potential for like cybernetic augmentation or psychic powers, things like that?
I am not allowed, you're right, I'm not allowed to give too many spoilers in that respect, but I can say that Agent White will be able to proficiently use 80% of the available human and general and specialist classes that were available in the book. And each one of those, not only are those going to factor in, the skills are going to factor in, as well as the stats. Like one of the stats that we have is intelligence. That determines how much experience you get and how quickly you learn. Another one of the stats is precision. Precision is going to affect reticle sway for the players on screen. Mm-hmm. So by changing your character, you're literally changing how you not only have to play the game, but changing, you know, how fast your reticle sits still or how quickly you recover when you're stunned. And it'll allow players not only in single player but in multiplayer to tweak their avatar and their character to the exact play style they want for different roles. Be it a medic, be it a sniper, be it a pilot, be it a leader class, or anything of that nature. And we think it's going to be a lot of fun and very deep, and players are really going to sink their teeth into it.
It sounds really exciting. It reminds me a lot of the buzz that's coming out now about the new Deus Ex game.
It's a lot of fun. I've been playing that most of this week.
I haven't had a chance to play that yet. I'm trying to remember, is that out for the PS3 or is that just a PC game?
Yes, it is PS3, Xbox 360, and PC.
I will have to pick that up this week. That sounds incredible. I'm really excited by the potential. So let's go ahead and mention the Kickstarter real quick here before people start tuning out.
Kickstarter.com is a really great program for artists, creative, and talented people. Mm-hmm. And what it does is it allows you to create a pledge drive and then reach out through your own social network, which is part of what I'm doing here with this interview. Thanks for the props and the plug.
Oh, absolutely.
And it allows you to reach out through your own social network and set up a project, tell people how you're going to make that project, and then try to get some seed funding for that project. Now, we're going to move ahead with status quo regardless of whether or not, you know, we're able to do this. But this would really help us get a bump to getting started and moving forward in terms of getting more artists and paying artists to do, you know, more concept work, getting our modelers paid, putting food on people's table, which mm-hmm. I'm all about.
Yep.
but Kickstarter is really great. Kickstarter.com. If you go there and search us, we are Status Quo. And just look up the Status Quo project on Kickstarter. But there are numerous other projects, creative projects, that are just outstanding for all kinds of creative people, from artists, role-playing games, musicians. You don't get the money unless you reach your pledge goal, but it does attract the attention of people all over the world. Some of our fans from Germany have already contributed. So it's really exciting, and if any of your listeners would go and give us a hand and help us reach our goal, we've got 27 days left, and I think it would be really exciting if, you know, we could reach our goal and give us a real, pardon the pun, a kickstart to our project.
Now, most Kickstarter projects offer some sort of special bonuses depending on how much you donate. You've got some really cool ideas in here.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you. There was a lot of deliberation that went into them. But aside from the generic thank you note that we're going to send people, you know, we want people to send us pictures for $10 donations so that we can put them in our fan scrapbook. For $20, you get a guaranteed invitation to close beta testing. $40, you get a copy, a downloadable copy of the soundtrack from the game composed by Dr. Randolph Partain. At $50, we're willing to name one of the colonists after you. At $100, you can actually, if you send us a headshot, we'll model some of the colonists to look like people that contribute to this level. All the way up to higher level donations or anything from helping us design certain parts of the game, like your own little secret level, all the way up to if you want to donate more than $5,000, we'll gladly take you on as an executive producer of the project and keep you involved in the creative process.
That's really cool. So your actual goal is not that high. It sounds big when you say it. It's about $10,000.
Right, and we're 2,600 in. And yeah. Fair being fair, it costs a whole lot of money to develop video games, but what this money will allow us to do is not only buy a couple of production boxes, but set up our data share and our bug tracking software so that we can actually start moving forward on the, you know, the initial design phase and going towards our playable alpha. And we're looking to do that anyway, but $10,000 is a lot of money to come out of our own pockets. So if we can have help from contributors or even if people just come to the site and send us an email and say, hey, I'd love to help you do concept art. We really are just looking for all kinds of contributions to help as many people as possible be a part of this project.
So, yeah, I wanted to jump back to the video game real quickly here. I just thought of this. We didn't ask you what consoles – now, I asked you offline, but just to put it on the record, what consoles are you planning to develop this for?
Initially, the game is going to be released for PC, but thanks to the wonderful people at Epic, the Unreal Development Kit, as well as UE3, has tools for building and porting in to the Xbox 360 and PS3. So if we move forward and we get enough player momentum to where a lot of people are enjoying the PC title, it'll be much easier for us to port the game over to consoles so that the console audience can enjoy status quo as well.
Excellent, excellent. So that's basically including the PS3 and the Xbox, my favorite being the PS3.
Yeah, we love our PS3. It's a valued member of our family.
Very cool. So let's see, just jumping back here real quick to my notes. Just want to make sure that we got everything covered without missing anything. Going back, you were talking to about the actual pen and paper game, because a lot of our listeners are pen and paper players.
Oh yeah.
Can you describe like your the actual gameplay a little bit, how the rules work, like when you're in combat or what have you?
Did you ever play Cyberpunk back in the 90s?
I know a lot of people did.
Okay. Well, having met Mike Pondsmith and thinking that the guy who wrote the original Cyberpunk was a genius, what I pretty much did was I built on that idea of the initial system of having, you know, your stats, your skills, and your classes, and putting those together and building a skill tree. But where I took it a step farther was, for one, I developed it with the D20, and two, I created three different kinds of classes, and eventually four different kinds of classes that can be stacked, as well as three different kinds of skills that can be stacked, to where it is a completely interchangeable modular system. You may not be able to do something one way because you don't have the skill, but you have, you know, other classes or skills that allow you to do something a completely different way, giving the player much more idea of choice. In combat, it streamlines combat because you're just looking at your base rolls in comparison to other people's base rolls. So it makes combat go much faster. And the system itself is streamlined to where it can run very cinematically. To where if you want to be a rules monkey and you want to crunch numbers and you want to play it that way, you're more than welcome to, and there are plenty of optional systems that allow you to do so. But if you want to make combat like a movie where it's just fast-paced and nasty and hardcore, then the system is streamlined and simplified to run like that.
Very cool. So, what would you say would be the best, easiest way to pick up and play the system? I mean, how would you teach somebody new to play status quo?
Well, fair being fair, we've done a lot of demos at conventions, but the book is pretty cut and dry and it's pretty easy to understand. Pick it up and read it, and even if there are parts that you as a player might not understand, if you find another group of gamers that are interested in, you know, sinking their teeth into it, it doesn't take much to really get up and get started. We have how to write a character in the first 16 pages of the book. So just we like to dive in and let people look at the races and see what grabs them, and then just go and play it from there. We're considering discussing, since I'm learning so much more about podcasts lately, we're considering discussing doing a couple of podcasts and just having this little bits that we put up on our site so fans can come and just listen and pick up rules primers really fast by listening to a quick session of the game.
Yeah, we've been getting a lot of positive feedback from our demo podcasts for nice. Mutants and Masterminds. A lot of people listen to them, both to learn the system and also for those people who can't find a gaming group. It acts as a allows them to sort of enjoy the game in lieu
game
of actually playing. Yeah, gaming by proxy.
Well, and I have a lot of friends that are in the military that mm-hmm. actually have been doing kind of the same thing because either they're overseas or they're on base. Mm-hmm. And they just can't find any geeks to game with. And that's kind of what they've been doing as well. And I really love that fans have been doing that because it does allow those people who aren't able to get a good gaming group to still kind of stay in the hobby and at least want to keep the industry alive.
Okay. So let me jump back over to Kickstarter because this is something that's really interesting to me because I'm actually looking at a couple of things. Having just taken over Vigilance Press recently.
Yeah, you are a creative person. It definitely applies to you.
Yep. We've actually been looking at a couple of different Kickstarter projects. The first one being a superhero-based our superhero game system based on the Fate game system. But what would you say to somebody who is looking to try and set up a Kickstarter project? What would you suggest to them as, you know, a set of tools for success, a basic toolkit for getting it to work out?
The best toolkit that you can have, besides just a great social network of your own and a lot of followers that would go and try to help you out, the best thing you can do is just look at other projects that have already been successful. See what they did, see how they put their page together, and see how they pretty much set up their pledge drive to where it was interesting and looked appealing. You mentioned it earlier that our rewards look really cool. Well, that was garnered from about 6 or 7 different successful projects that were doing the same thing that we're doing. And we looked at what they offered in terms of incentives and thought, hey, we can do that. That's a great idea. And it shows love for the fans. So if you're thinking of doing something, then look at other role-playing games or look at other video games or look at other projects and see how successful people manage to accomplish their goal. And don't copy it, obviously. You know, do your own thing, but emulate that, you know. It's the best form of flattery, so to speak. Just look at what they've done to be successful and try to build on that and make something new and unique and in your own way better than that.
Yep, that's basically what I've been pulling from it myself so far. Now you've got a video on here that's a nice little video production. Who is it that you have two voices narrating? Who are your narrators? Are they people that are working on the project?
As a matter of fact, they are. One of them is me because I just wanted to do the read up on my own project, and the other one is one of our associate producers who will also be lending voice talent to the project itself. Her name is Drew Tuck, mm-hmm. and she has done some stuff for audiobooks as well as just voiceovers for kind of like infomercials, and she's really excited about getting into doing video games.
Ah, very cool. Now, if you need to network with any more voice actors, get in touch with me. I know a couple of folks.
We have a ton of them, yeah. I mean, and to tell the truth, ultimately, that's what we really would like to do, is to network and find a lot of different people. Because the reason that we got started on this project and the reason Kickstarter's been great in getting us to realize, the video game industry right now is kind of like a big boys club, and the jobs that are available are few and far between, and you have to have a lot of experience on previously released titles. They're not taking the shot because it's a major industry to let new people in the door. So there's a lot of creative people that even have degrees in game design that just aren't able to find the jobs that they're looking for. Projects like ours allow creative and talented people who want to get their foot in the door to come and practice the technology and practice working with other teams. teams and other creative people and see if this is not only the right fit for them, but maybe be a part of something that stands the chance of a great deal of commercial success.
So what kind of people are you looking for still right now, just in case anybody's listening that might want to send you a resume?
We could always use programmers, because programmers are amazing people. They're very challenging, but we love them because they always contribute new great ideas. And programmers are also great because we're looking to expand into mobile platforms as well to make smaller titles that are just kind of quick up fun to play games. But we're looking for concept artists, modelers, animators, pretty much anybody that has experience in 3D modeling, texture mapping. We still have a lot of room to fill. Our bio at the bottom of the Kickstarter page shows a lot of people who are already involved in the project. And we have the core group of people that we need to pretty much make the game so far. But games like Assassin's Creed and Gears of War have hundreds of people contributing and getting paid for their work and doing things like that. Our Kickstarter will allow us to pay more people as more people come involved. But what we're really looking for is just people that have a passion for gaming, that have learned a lot already and want to learn more, be a part of our knowledge share, and contribute to a project that one day when we get a nice big fat check, we can break it into a lot of pieces for a lot of great people.
So you're obviously very ambitious with this particular setting. You have a lot of confidence in it. You were talking to me earlier about some non-gaming applications you think you'd be interested in. What kinds of stuff do you think the audience might get to see?
Insofar as non-gaming applications?
Yeah, like what other entertainment focuses do you guys have?
Well, we really do, because when you have all the things to make video games, you also just happen to have all the same folks in-house to make short films, animations, things like that. And I've always loved animation. I've always been a big fan of art and comic book design. And with my experience in print media, we're actually looking to expand once we become a full-fledged company and do all kinds of things, not only for Status Quo, but other projects as well. Graphic novels, comic books, card games, board games, more role-playing games. It's got to be more role-playing games. As well as just books, novels, fiction from the universe and other people's universes. We really do want to expand into kind of a full-service production company and a studio that cranks out stuff for all kinds of different fan interest.
Excellent, excellent. So, what do you... Let's see. You, I don't even think I mentioned this, but you are actually the author of the original setting yourself, right?
I am.
And who else is contributing to the settings, or who else has contributed to the settings since then? I mean, how many writers do you have working on this? Is this still pretty much your baby, or do you have other people who've contributed?
A lot of people have contributed from the initial series into the final complete edition that we released back in February. Wes Moore, Curtis Petrie. I mean, honestly, the list just goes on and on and on. We've had a variety of creative inputs on the project in terms of not only game balance, but also how the classes were formed, how the skills were formed. All of the people that have come together, you know, to create MiftKitty Press were really a big part of that in helping me flesh out all of that. So it was never just me. It was always a lot of other great people that bouncing ideas back and forth and having long creative discussions, either part of a gaming session or just sitting down and working out the bugs.
Okay, excellent, excellent. I'm sitting here trying to think of other questions. You're so efficient at answering.
Well, I appreciate it. I love
most
talking
of, most
to
of our guests
the...
like to ramble.
Well, I you know, like I said, I really appreciate the opportunity, but I've talked to so many people about this, and I intend to keep talking until people just don't want to listen anymore, because it's a great project, and I, you know, having written Status Quo, of course I love the universe, but there are a lot of other wonderful, talented people who have jumped on board, who have fallen in love with the project. So now it's not just about, hey guys, look at this cool book I wrote and illustrated. It's about all of us working together to make something that we all are really proud of. And I'm excited to have these people kind of standing at my side to help me work on this and just watching the franchise grow.
Yep. Well, I have to say, you know, when my friend put us in touch, I was kind of glancing at the Kickstarter page, and my first reaction is, what is this? How does this relate to what I'm doing? And then I start scanning down, I'm like, oh, he's graduating from role-playing games to video games, and that's exactly. Really exciting. And I started, getting into the nuts and bolts of it, and I knew I had to get you on the show. I'm really excited by Status Quo. I hope you guys do have a lot of success with this. And
thank you.
I know I'll probably be logging. Once I'm done here, I'll go jump on and make my pledge. But this is it sounds like a really cool group of people that you're working with. I love the music. If you guys haven't had a chance yet, once you're done listening to the podcast, go to Kickstarter.com, look up the Status Quo Project, and play the video and listen to the music. Now, that was actually composed by your composer for the game, right?
That was composed by Dr. Randolph Partain.
Yep.
He got his doctorate from Rice University, and he is a former college professor. It's really cool having him on the project, because when I look at him, when I originally met him, I was worried because I was afraid, being a doctor of music, he wouldn't know what the word dubstep meant. And yet he's just learning, and he's growing as not only a composer, and he's really loving what he's doing, but he's bringing so much valuable experience. I mean, when the time comes and we get full backing for the project, if I look at him and say, okay, I want something that sounds like music from Serenity, he'll go do it. If I look at him and say, I want an entire orchestra with a chorus of people like the Halo soundtrack, he can go and do it. If I look at him and say, I want drum and bass or dubstep or electronica, he can do it. And it's, again, he is one of many amazing people that has just blown my mind being on the project. And he cranked that out for me in like a week, just because he's enormously talented. And it really just is our honor and our pleasure to have him on board on the project.
Yeah, it must be really, it's got to be a really big boon to you to actually have somebody to create your own stuff instead of having to use like nicked or bottled music. You know, a lot of people making their videos are using just, a bed of like public domain or licensed music. But what you've got is actually your own stuff here. It's all your own content.
When you're making your own project, everything has to be yours, especially if you're going to ask somebody for money for it.
Yeah.
It's got to be yours. It's got to be original. And that's why we started pulling all these great folks together. We have to have these assets contributed so that we can build this game from the ground up. The only thing we'd be using out of the box, so to speak, is the UDK. And granted, we have other software licenses that we've gotten. We've even looked into using Massive, which they used in The Lord of the Rings for all the giant crowd scenes.
Right.
And we've looked into licensing that. That's a huge price tag, let me tell you.
I imagine so.
But pretty much the content itself, all of the music, the sound effects, one of the guys that's working with this is our lead sound designer, Jeff. He is doing awesome stuff recording our sound bank and building up just the sound files, everything from crickets chirping outside to how the plasma rifle is going to sound. And you have to do all that from the ground up for a video game, as you do you should do for any creative project.
That's very cool. That must be really exciting to work on. I'm like, my hands are sweating, wanting to get in and try my hand at it. But it sounds like you guys have a lot of work to do. So you guys, it sounds like a really big project, and it sounds like you've got the right people in place to do it. That's the key.
Yeah, that is definitely the right people.
And that was really helpful to me when I came on with Vigilance, was having the right people in place. So I can tell you that where you're coming from, it sounds like you've got some brilliant assets at your disposal there.
And we hope to continue to grow. The more people that want to help out with the project, the more likely we are to be successful. And that's what really is important. So if any of your listeners want to come to Kickstarter and contribute to the project, it's definitely appreciated. If they send me a resume and say, hey, whether you make your pledge drive or not, I'm a concept artist or I'm an animator or whatever, I'd like to be involved in the project, then we'd love to talk to them.
Excellent. Well, I'll definitely, we can assume that we've just passed that message along. And was there anything else you wanted to tell our listeners before we go ahead and call it a podcast?
Well, not to sound too cheesy, but fair being fair, I'm living proof that if you have a project and you pursue it long enough and you have a lot of great people behind you that believe in you, then just about anything is possible. So just keep creating, keep running good games and use those games for your inspiration for any creative project. And the sky really is no longer the limit.
Fantastic. Well, thank you very much, Cheshire, for being with us tonight.
And, thanks for having me.
I will try and get this podcast up as soon as possible. For all our listeners, we do have some more podcasts that we're in the process of mixing, trying to get out, but including the Paragons the Paragons podcast that we were working on with Leon Chang and Jack Norris. We hope to have that up soon. But for the meanwhile, hope this one is exciting and interesting for you as it was for me. And until next time, stay vigilant.